Bum bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum ba da dum bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum. Welcome to Everyday Musicality, the podcast in which we discuss all things related to Gordon's music learning theory and how it can help unlock the inner musician that lives inside of all of us. I'm your host, Heather Scholdeis, music educator and faculty member for the Gordon Institute for Music Learning. In this episode, I talk about harmonic skill development at the aural-oral and verbal association levels of learning. Hello and welcome to the Everyday Musicality Podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about the harmonic skill development that can happen at the aural-oral and verbal association levels of learning. Way back in episodes 34 and 35, I talked about tonal and rhythm skill development at the aural-oral level as part of a mini-series of episodes I did on the aural-oral level of learning. More recently, in episodes 43 and 45, I talked about tonal and rhythm skill development at the verbal association level as part of a mini-series of episodes I did on the verbal association level of learning. Now, I want to be sure to talk about the harmonic skill development that can take place at these levels, because sometimes people seem to think that harmony is something that needs to wait until later grade levels or until students are more advanced, when in actuality, singing or playing in harmony is something that can begin right away at the aural-oral level, starting in very small ways. So today I thought I'd talk through how we can begin incorporating harmonic skill development into our teaching early on and how this can build throughout the aural-oral and verbal association skill levels. The first step to helping students learn to sing in harmony is something I've already talked about a lot on this podcast, and that is audiating and singing the resting tone, or the home tone, or tonic, whatever you might call it, that first scale degree. In music learning theory-based instruction, we call that the resting tone. Way back in episode 15, I talked about informal guidance and how we can expose students to the resting tone and encourage their audiation of resting tone. Then in episode 34, I talked about developing students' audiation and singing of resting tone through formal instruction at the aural-oral level. Once students are audiating and singing the resting tone, we can use that as a gateway to begin singing in harmony. We can do this in two ways: resting tone drones and resting tone ostinati. First, resting tone drone. If students are successfully audiating and singing resting tone, we can simply have them sustain the resting tone to turn it into a drone. We can take a familiar song for which students can already sing the resting tone and just ask them to hum it continuously, pausing to take a quick breath whenever they need to and then jumping back in. Then, while the students are humming the resting tone continuously, we as the teacher can sing the familiar song over the top. Or we could also split students into two groups, having one group sing the song and the other group hum the resting tone. It might sound like this. This time, while I sing that song, your job is to keep the resting tone going. So you're going to hum it like this. Mm, mm, and whenever you need to take a breath, mm, you'll just sneak a little quick breath. Mm, and then keep on humming. Keep that going. Mm. Yeah, da, da, da. Just a quick word of warning, the first time you have students try humming a resting tone drone, it usually sounds like a swarm of bees, with students often humming random pitches at the same time. But just keep trying it, and I promise you it will get better. Of course, it could be that students' audiation of resting tone is not quite solid yet, in which case they might benefit from some more exposure to the resting tone through informal guidance or formal instruction at aural-oral. But more often than not, students just need time to explore and work through that new skill of humming the resting tone drone. The other way we can turn the resting tone into a harmony part is through singing a resting tone ostinato. If students have sung the resting tone on a neutral syllable at aural-oral, we can just have them sing the resting tone on a neutral syllable to the macro beat or to the micro beat, like this. Hop on one foot, nanny goat, hop on one foot, nanny goat, do. Hop on 2 feet, nanny goat, hop on 2 feet, nanny goat, do. Now that we've learned that song and you are familiar with it, your job this time is going to be to sing that song, and I'm going to add a new part. Bum, 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 ready, here we go. Hop on one foot, nanny goat, hop on one foot, nanny goat, do. Hop on 2 feet, nanny goat, hop on 2 feet, nanny goat, do. For the new part, I was just singing the resting tone to the macro beats. Bum, 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 let's have you try that part. Bum, 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 you keep it going and I'll do the song. Bum, 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 hop on one foot, nanny goat, nanny goat, hop on one foot, nanny goat, do. Hop on 2 feet, nanny goat, nanny goat, hop on 2 feet, nanny goat, do. We could also do the same thing, but singing the resting tone on the microbeat. Finally, once students have sung a macrobeat resting tone ostinato and a microbeat resting tone ostinato, we could have them try singing a resting tone ostinato that also incorporates a rhythm pattern, like bum, 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 hop on one foot, nanny goat, nanny goat, hop on one foot, nanny goat, do. Hop on 2 feet, nanny goat, nanny goat, hop on 2 feet, nanny goat, do. So resting tone drones and resting tone ostinati are a simple way to take the skill of singing the resting tone on a neutral syllable at the aural-oral level and turning it into singing in harmony. A quick note about singing songs with resting tone accompaniment. Not every song will sound good with a resting tone accompaniment. It needs to be something that doesn't have sustained dominant or other chords that will clash with the resting tone. In my book, I have an appendix in which I provide a harmonic index for Jump Right In books 1 through 4, as well as a list of songs that work well with resting tone accompaniment. That's in my book, Weaving It All Together, available from sponsored GIA Publications. Also, I think I have an older version of that harmonic index available on the resources page on my website, so I'll link to that in the show notes. Next, if students have experienced success with singing resting tone drones and ostinati, we can expand that to tonic and dominant ostinati, so using the first and fifth scale degrees in a repeating fashion as harmonic accompaniment. In ORF-based instruction, we might call this a bordune. I'm going to refer to it as a tonic dominant ostinato. First, we can do this as a parallel ostinato, in which scale degrees 1 and 5 are sounded at the same time. Now, unless you can throat sing, most of us can't sing more than one pitch at a time ourselves, so this would need to be done by splitting students into two groups. One half of the class would sing the resting tone, and the other half would sing the fifth scale degree, while you sing the song, like this. Ya-da-da-da-da-da-da-dum. Sailing around the sun, sailing around the moon, sailing around the chimney top every afternoon. So one half of the class would sing, bum, 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 try that part, bum, 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 bum. And the other half will sing, bum, 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 try that part, bum, 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 bum. And this is where I would split the class into two different groups, half on bum, 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 and half on bum, bum, bum. Since you're only one person, you go ahead and pick whether you want to sing bum or bum. Ready, here we go. Sally go round the sun, Sally go round the moon, Sally go round the chimney top every afternoon. Then you can have students switch pitches and repeat. This parallel 1-5 ostinato can be sung on microbeats, macrobeats, or a rhythm pattern. Another way of doing a tonic-dominant ostinato is to do an alternating ostinato. This is just what it sounds like, alternating between the two pitches, like this. Bum, 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 bum,
sailing around the sun, sailing around the moon, sailing around the chimney top every afternoon.
Now, the way I just modeled that ostinato would be appropriate for the aural-oral level of learning because we were singing that ostinato on neutral syllables. Once your students have reached the verbal association level of learning, where they're singing the resting tone with solfege and they're starting to label tonality, you could repeat that same activity with that alternating 1-5 ostinato, and you could add solfege and labels. For example, you could sing that alternating 1-5 ostinato that I just did with the song Sally Go Round the Sun, and instead of singing bum, 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 you could have students sing it on do, so, do, so, and you could label that the resting tone was do, so the song was in major tonality. Going back to the resting tone ostinato that I modeled with the song Nanny Goat, if your students were at verbal association with that song, you could have them sing la, 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 la as the resting tone ostinato, and you could have them label that since the resting tone was la, the song was in minor tonality. So you could add solfege to those resting tone ostinati and those tonic and dominant ostinati, and then use the solfege syllable for the resting tone to label the tonality at verbal association. One quick word about helping students sing in harmony. If you just throw them into the deep end and say, hey, here's your new part, you sing it, they will often struggle. Instead, I always like to think about readiness. How can we scaffold students' learning experiences so that they will have the readiness to sing in harmony? The process I like to use for this is to start by modeling the harmony part, then teaching it by rote, asking the students to try it while I sing the song, and then having them try it in two groups. So first, when I want to teach students to perform a harmony part, I'll start by asking them to sing the familiar song, and I'll add the harmony part. This gives students a chance to hear how the two parts fit together before they have to sing the new harmony part. After that, I'll stop and say, I added a new part. It went like this. And I'll model the harmony part by itself and then say, now you try that. So I teach it by rote without the song. Next, I'll say, now you try that new part while I sing the song and have students sing in harmony with me. Finally, if they're successful with that, I'll split the class into two groups, having one group sing the song and the other group sing the harmony part. I find that breaking it down with this process really helps students audiate the new harmony part and gives them the readiness to sing it successfully. Again, that process is teacher models the harmony part while students sing the familiar song, teacher teaches the harmony part by rote, teacher sings the melody while students sing the harmony part, and students sing the melody and harmony in two groups. Really quickly, I'll mention that I do document this process in my book, Weaving It All Together, in which I do have an entire chapter devoted to helping students sing in harmony and develop harmonic skills. So back to sequencing harmonic skill development. We've started with resting tone drones and ostinati, and then tonic and dominant ostinati, both at aural-aural with neutral syllables, and then adding solfege and labels at verbal association. Next, we can move on to tonic and dominant chord roots. Now, before you're going to ask students to try singing chord roots to familiar songs, I strongly recommend modeling chord roots so that your students can hear them. As soon as your students can carry a familiar melody without you, you can start adding the chord roots. I used to do this with even my kindergarten students. By the end of kindergarten, when the students could sing familiar melodies without me, I would start adding the chord roots so they could start to hear what they sound like and start audiating the two parts together. This is important readiness for asking students to sing the chord roots. So as soon as your students can perform familiar melodies without your help, start adding the chord roots so students can start getting used to what they sound like with the familiar melodies. Then when you think they're ready, you can use the same process I've already mentioned to teach students to sing the chord roots. So you could start by asking students to sing the familiar melody while you sing the chord roots. Let's say your students had learned to sing the song, "What shall we do when we all go out? All go out, all go out. What shall we do when we all go out? When we all go out to play?" You might come in on another day and say, "Hey, remember that song? Your job is to sing that song while I add a new part to try to trick you. Don't let me trick you. You do the song. Bum, bum, bum. Ready, sing. What shall we do when we all go out? All go out, all go out. What shall we do when we all go out? When we all go out to play?" The new part that I added sounded like this. Bum, 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 bum. You give that new part a try. Bum, 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 bum. Next, let's see if you can keep those chord roots going while I sing the song. So you do the chord roots, you start first. Bum, 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 keep that going.
What shall we do when we all go out? All go out, all go out. What shall we do when we all go out? When we all go out to play?
Then you could ask half the class to sing the chord roots while the other half sings the song. Once your students are familiar with singing the chord roots to the familiar song, you could even try singing duets. You could have one student sing the melody and another sing the song. Or you could have students take turns singing duets with you, like this.
So he does the chord roots and I do the song. Awesome. Now you get to look around and find someone in their listening sheet, and you get to pass to one of them. 5, 4. Oh, that was fast. Evelyn does the chord roots, and I'll try to trick her.
That audio was from a video of some of my former first grade students a long time ago. I'll link to that video in the show notes in case you'd like to see it. Also, you might have noticed that the song in that video was in Dorian, and instead of singing chord roots on 1 and 5, we were singing chord roots on 1 and 7. Having students sing chord roots in tonalities that use tonic and subtonic instead of tonic and dominant, like Dorian, Mixolydian, Phrygian, that can sometimes be a nice place to start if your students are struggling with chord roots on 1 and 5. Because 1 and 7 don't have as wide an interval between them, 1 and 7 chord roots can be an easier starting place. So first, you can have students sing chord roots on neutral syllables at aural aural in whatever tonality you choose, and then add solfege to the chord roots at verbal association. As I think I've mentioned before, I have a blog called Research to Real Life, in which I summarize findings of research studies and give suggestions for how those findings can be applied in music education settings. The very first post I did on that blog featured a study by MLT practitioner Denise Gilbeau, who conducted an experiment in which she found that students who experienced chord roots to songs ended up being better at vocal improvisation. She asked students to listen to an unfinished melody and sing an ending to the song. And the kids who had experienced chord roots were able to vocally improvise an ending to the song that made more tonal sense. So hearing, singing, and playing chord roots helped those students develop the harmonic audiation necessary to sense the implied harmony in the music they were hearing and to improvise an ending that also used implied harmony in that given context. I just think that is so cool. If you'd like to read more about that study and some implications and suggestions for teaching chord roots, I'll link to that in the show notes. So once your students can start adding chord roots, I suggest adding them for as many songs as possible. model chord roots while students sing the song, teach students to sing the chord roots by rote, play the chord roots on an instrument, which we'll be talking about in the next episode. You can also extend this harmonic learning by expanding chord roots into full chords. I especially like to do this at the verbal association skill level because it's a neat way of connecting the pattern function labels to chords. To expand chord roots into full chords, I would start with a familiar song with which students can already sing the chord roots. Maybe it's, "What shall we do when we all go out, all go out, all go out? What shall we do when we all go out to play?" And if students had been at the verbal association level of learning, maybe we would have learned to sing those chord roots with solfege. Do, do, so, do. And we would have sung those in two groups. On another day, we might start by reviewing the song in the chord roots, and then I might say, do doesn't always like to go to so. Sometimes do likes to go to T, like this. Do, do, ti, do. Do, do, ti, do. Give that a try. Do, do, ti, do. I have another part. It goes like this. Mi, mi, fa, mi. Try that. Mi, mi, fa, mi. Then we could practice having students sing one of those two parts, and I would sing the other one. Or we could split the students into two groups with each group singing a part. Next, I might tell the students, I have a third part. It sounds like this. So, 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 so. Try that. So, 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 so. I wonder what it would sound like if we sang all three parts together at the same time. Let's try it. And then I would divide the students into three groups and assign each group a part. Eventually, hopefully the students would just be able to breathe and start singing their parts together, but at first it can be helpful to layer the parts in. Let's give that a try. So group one, you start with your part first. Do, do, ti, do. Group one, keep doing that. Let's add group two. Mi, mi, fa, mi. Keep it going. Mi, mi, fa. Let's add group three. So, 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 so. Keep it going. So, so. I'll add the song. What shall we do when we all go out? All go out, all go out. What shall we do when we all go out? When we all go out to play. And then the cool part is that we can say, group one, when I was holding up one finger, what pitch were you singing? Do. Group two, what were you singing? Me. What about group three? So. What does that sound like? Do, me, so. And nothing else. That was major tonic. Except instead of singing each pitch separately, we sang all three at the same time. That's a major tonic chord instead of a major tonic pattern. So it's cool to help the students make that connection at verbal association. You could even have them sing the chord names on the chord roots, like tonic, tonic, dominant, tonic. That reminds me, one thing you haven't been able to see because it's a podcast is that when I introduce singing chord roots, I show the chord numbers on my fingers. So for example, when I model the chord roots for What Shall We Do When We All Go Out, I show on my fingers 1, 1, 5, 1. So I show one finger for tonic and five fingers for dominant. I don't explain to the students why I do that. I just start showing those numbers. Same thing if we're singing chord roots in minor. I use one finger for minor tonic and five fingers for minor dominant. Some people in Gimel Professional Development Levels courses have asked if you could use Kirwan hand signs to show the chord roots instead. And sure, you could. But I prefer showing the chord numbers for several reasons. One is that it stays consistent between tonalities. Instead of showing different Kirwan hand signs for 1 and 5 in major and 1 and 5 in minor, you can just show one finger and five fingers. Another reason I like to use chord numbers is that you can use the same symbol when expanding to full chords. You can use the numbers to represent the chord roots, or you can use the numbers to represent the full chords. For example, showing one finger can mean do for one group, mi for another, and so for another. Finally, I like to use numbers instead of Kerwin hand signs because it makes it so easy to move to Roman numeral chord numbers. When my students got to fourth grade, I would start teaching them to sing chord roots by reading Roman numerals for the chords in notation, and then we would use Roman numeral analysis to compose. They would write in the Roman numerals above a blank staff to represent the chord progression of a familiar song, and then they would compose a partner song using that same harmonic progression that they had written in Roman numerals. So all this to say, you can do whatever you want in your own classroom, but I think there's a ton of benefit to using the numbers on your hands when singing chord roots rather than Kerwin hand signs. Okay, so this has been a quick rundown of some of the harmonic skills you can start helping students develop at the aural oral levels. You can start with resting tone drones and resting tone ostinati, expand that into tonic and dominant ostinati, both parallel and alternating, and then you can transition into tonic and dominant chord roots. You can also bridge to generalization and creativity improvisation with those harmonic skills. For example, if you've been teaching students to sing tonic and dominant chord roots with solfege in major and minor at verbal association, you could bridge to generalization by taking a song you've never taught the chord roots to before and asking students to figure out the chord roots. Just be aware that this is challenging at first, but if you provide students with the readiness of learning lots of tunes with chord roots by rote at aural-aural and verbal association, they will be ready to start figuring out chord roots independently at generalization. Also, you could bridge to creativity improvisation with these harmonic skills. For example, you could take the harmonic progression of a familiar song and ask students to improvise a new melody over that progression. You could take that three-part harmony that I just did a few minutes ago, and once students are able to sing the three parts in harmony, you could have them take turns doing melodic improvisation over that three-part harmony. If you want to play around with that, I talked about and modeled improvising a melody over a familiar progression in several previous episodes. I'll link to those in the show notes. In the next episode, I thought I would go through some of the ways that you can use classroom instruments at the aural-aural and verbal association levels, utilizing the tonal, rhythmic, and harmonic skills students are learning through singing, chanting, and moving at the aural-aural and verbal association levels, and transferring those to instruments. Before I go, I want to mention that there are some great events coming up through the Gordon Institute for Music Learning, one of our podcast sponsors. On Saturday, November 5th, GIMO faculty member Natasha Sigman will be presenting an in-person workshop in Brooklyn for the New York GIMO chapter titled Facilitating Creative Experiences in the Music Classroom. Then on Saturday, November 12th, the New England GIMEL chapter will be hosting an in-person event in Danbury, Connecticut, with three different presenters entitled A Taste of MLT, Different Flavors of Music Learning Theory. Then on Sunday, November 13th, GIMEL faculty member Karen McAvoy will be hosting a faculty hangout on early childhood music, Q&A, and repertoire sharing. As a reminder, those GIMEL faculty hangouts are virtual and are free to GIMEL members. I'll link to the GIMEL website in the show notes so you can check out those events. In the meantime, if you have questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please get in touch. You can email me or send me a voice memo at everydaymusicality@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and let's keep musicking every day.